In the Cathedral of Speed, it is only his bikes.
Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Amen.
Come with this impromptu intro, because in the land of Pecco Bagnaia, may your woes be many and your wins few. Welcome to episode 597 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and we're going to talk about MotoGP's Assen TT, the centennial, the 100th anniversary of racing at Assen, and it was a special one, all right. Special because, well, Marc Marquez has probably just killed this title fight if it wasn't already dead.
Stop. They're already dead.
Yeah, it was one extra headbutt at the end of season 3 of Invincible. If you know, you know.
Shoom. 16 times over.
Exactly. If it wasn't dead already, it's certainly dead now.
Is Pecco laying on the ground going, I take the good with the bad?
Well, that would be a lie, because where's the good right now?
I can't see any. Look, he had a better sprint.
Marco Bezzecchi has been outstanding on the Aprilia, and he's proving a case to why his teammate shouldn't leave early.
Oh, we're going to be talking about that later as well, because holy, let's just say we got a bit of a reminder of the Jorge Martin contract situation over the course of this weekend, and long story short, both teams are digging in hard while firing their Kamehamehas at each other like it's Cell and Gohan at the end of the Android saga again. By the way, that scene is now 32 years old.
Same brain cell.
I did not realize that that scene is actually 11 months older than me. I'm 33 next month. Christ!
Guys, just anyway. Like Marc Marquez winning on a mangled arm.
Yeah, like, it's all come full circle, apparently. As you can probably tell by now, I'm joined by my beloved co-hosts, Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. And we're going to talk some bikes for the next 45 minutes or so. Marc Marquez are taking his 6th Grand Prix win of the year, his 9th sprint win of the year. And, well, Alex Marquez, God bless him, he's tried all season. The mistake was coming, it happened, and it's a biggie. We'll talk about that in a minute. Marco Bezzecchi, single-handedly salvaging Aprilia's reputation, one podium finish at a time. A not-so-good Moto3 finish, and some exclusive juicy rumors about some of the backmarkers and how a silly season seat might be being filled by someone you didn't expect. La Brazil. More on that soon. Places you can find us real quick in the meantime are on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you want to follow us on Blue Sky personally, you can at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, or cbuckley917.bsky.social. We're on Instagram if you want video highlights of the show at motorsport101pod. Or on TikTok at m101_podcast. All of those details are on our website, motorsport101.com, for full-on written reviews of all the weekend's action, including this one, including F1 in Austria, and including your questions on this month's Ask Dre. Get those in. Look out for the tweets on social media every month. I answer your questions on motorsport and beyond. I've got one about Wimbledon this month, of all things. I would talk about that more, but I think 3 more women seeded players have been eliminated in the time it's taken me to get through this intro. If you really back us financially, you can. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor is, as Jason is right now. Thank you very much for listening in, fellas. Hope you enjoy the show. Without further ado, let's get into one of the big ones, one of the blue ribbon events of the year, the Assen TT.
The big weekend of the year. You could keep your Italian Grand Prix of Mugello. You can keep your Spanish Grand Prix of Barcelona or Jerez. I mean, this is the big one. It's the only one that's got its own unique name, the TTS. And, well, it really might be over. This was a killer blow for Marc Marquez in the 2025 MotoGP title race, despite being bruised and battered after 2 crashes on Friday. one of them where he landed on his junk. The championship leader withstood huge pressure from Alex Marquez, his brother, in the sprint, and Marco Bezzecchi in the Grand Prix to take his fifth double victory of the season so far. And with Alex Marquez crashing with Pedro Acosta in the Grand Prix, breaking a metacarpal in his hand in the process, Mark extended his championship lead out to 68 points. It ties him with the great Giacomo Agostini, 68 Premier League victories, class victories.
68 Premier League victories. Could you imagine Manchester City with 68 Premier League titles?
I know you could imagine it. If that was in one season, you'd cry. If that was all time, you'd laugh. Only Valentino Rossi has more MotoGP Premier Class wins with 89. But before we talk about how dumb we are, Dre, I'm going to tee this up. What were the bookmakers' odds for Marc Marquez winning the title today?
I can tell you the odds right now on Marc Marquez to win the 2025 MotoGP World Championship are 1 to 100.
Is that good?
Well, let's put it to you this way. I'll put this in fluent American, because I know half of our audience is from the land of the US of A, and you have a unique betting language, which I don't like, but you use it anyway. Because in America, obviously, they use betting language that relates to how do you win $100. If you wanted Marc Marquez to win you $100 to win you the 2025 World Championship, you'd have to risk 10 grand.
I can simplify that. If you bet $100 and that cashes, you would come back with an appropriately on-brand $101.
Profit! Don't spend it all at once.
Remember, he gave up Honda because he needed change, and you got to say his name. His name is Marc Marquez. This was a brilliant weekend.
For Marc.
Not for his
rivals.
Didn't
start that way.
No.
Remember, he landed on his groin.
He landed on his groin. He landed on his chin, has stitches in his face.
Yeah, he was dinged up. Luckily, no broken bones, no fractures. But like you said, there was a 27G blow to the elbow in his first crash at Ramshuk, where he basically downshifted too quickly, lost the rear of the car.
Kyle Larson.
Flung him out at 120 miles an hour. Banged his elbow on the ground. Luckily, his arm went numb for a minute, but thankfully he was okay. And then the second time was at turn 7 down the hill. Again, 100 miles an hour, span him off, slid into the gravel, knocked the wind out of him because it caught him in the old wedding tackle. That man is not having children. Like I think a body part went back in, basically. So good luck to him there. Gonna need some tweezers for that.
Yeah, unfortunately, at Assen, there are not many small crashes. There is so many medium speed turns here, and pretty much all of them have crash potential.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's so easy to crash a bike at Assen. It's not even funny. But so he was bruised and battered, and he took to the sprint. He could only qualify fourth. He couldn't get a final lap in because he was blocked by, he didn't get blocked. He almost lost the front into turn one on his final lap, and that was him done, basically. Fabio Quartararo had his fourth pole position of the year. It didn't really mean anything because Yamaha is still a donkey. But Marc Marquez got to the front at the end of lap one of the sprint, had his brother Alex behind him again, get really close, but just couldn't find a way passing because, and I think the best way of putting this, Cam, essentially was everywhere before an overtaking spot, Mark was so good that he couldn't get anyone behind him to line up a pass properly.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, this was on raw lap time, a race where Mark was under real pressure, both in the sprint and in race trim. But really, it was the final few corners, 14, 15, and then through the chicane. He would set them up so well. I mean, Mark loves his left-handers, that he would be able to then take a slow-in, fast-out line through the final chicane, and that would protect him down into turn one. And he was able to do that like clockwork all weekend. Wasn't necessarily the fastest way around the track, but it was a way that prevented anyone from getting a wheel up his inside, or even really trying. And with how famously critical these bikes are in their front tire, shame there isn't a solution for that, Michelin.
I forgot to mention this in the set list, that Michelin announced this weekend that they are scrapping their plans to bring their new front tire in for 2026. Allegedly, not enough of the grid voted in favor of having them brought in. Teams like stability. There was only a vocal minority that really liked this tire, and as a result, Michelin decided, well, it's probably the fairest for the field to not bring this tire in.
That's the politically correct answer.
Yeah. I think the real answer is, why the fuck are they wasting all that money and developing a brand new tire if they're not going to be in the sport beyond the end of next year anyway?
Yeah, where are they going? Now, bye.
Yeah, they're going to World Superbikes.
Funny how that works. We just trade one tire manufacturer for another.
They're literally swapping. Like with Pirelli.
What
Pirelli
an enormous waste of all of our fucking time.
Right.
Yeah. With how critical the front ends were, it was hard to try and put the front wheel up the inside of someone here. And again, Mark was so good through turn 15, he was able to more or less defend all the way down into turn one with the way he could set up the rest of the lap. And doesn't hurt with the fact that the Ducati's traction out of that final chicane was almighty, visibly, yeah, just, every single lap.
Just money. Again and again and again. Money, money, money. And like in the sprint, Alex Marquez could only get close. He couldn't jam a wheel down the inside and try a lunge. And in the Grand Prix, it was the same with Marco Bezzecchi. And I may or may not have been a little stinker on Twitter after that Grand Prix and put a tweet out that said, was that hard enough for you?
Oh, don't worry. Mark Marquez cut that off at the pass after the Grand Prix.
Oh, Mark was basically telling any member of the media that was prepared to listen, the official press conference, an interview with TNT Sports, who we watched their coverage on Discord. He was telling every member of the media that was prepared to listen, respect the riders. Well, which we know
he didn't name names.
He didn't
name
names, but we know exactly who that was directed across to. And look, I will say exactly what I said last week. To imply that Alex Marquez doesn't want to win the world championship by softballing the way he races his brother is incredibly disrespectful. I get it. I get why the question was asked. I'll give the person in question this. It takes a pair of steel ones to ask that question. But some questions don't need answering.
And so, should we reward ballsiness over ignorance?
No,
because
and as I said in my DRR of this race weekend, the first question I'll be asking as a follow-up is why did you argue in bad faith to begin with that the Marquez brothers wouldn't race each other in the first place? Why?
He's the younger brother. Anyone who is the younger brother wants to beat the older brother by any means necessary.
This is where Brian comes crashing in behind Dre. With a point to prove.
This is where my brother comes in. It's like, he's faced me in Mario Kart. He still bears the scars.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it'd be like that. But
yeah.
If anything, the fact that Marco Bezzecchi was the one that kept it so close with Mark in the actual Grand Prix was actually a very nice way of just shutting all that bullshit down. Because Marco Bezzecchi and Mark Marquez do not get along at all.
Well, Dre, I mean, he was making it so easy on Mark with the way he was power sliding his bike around on both wheels to get it around just to try and get close enough. There is a slow-mo from that race of Marco Bezzecchi on full whatever opposite lock is on a motorcycle. He was tying the front of that bike into knots to try and chase Mark down.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. He didn't have it easy, but once again, well, the quote from Cal Crutchlow a couple years ago rings truer than ever. If Mark gets on a Ducati, the rest of this field isn't going to see which way he went. And this balloons that championship gap out to what is, objectively speaking, a fairly unassailable gap.
It's 68 points.
68 points.
Almost
for 68 wins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are we still asking this question? Unlike last podcast, see you in 2026. Complimentary.
Yeah, we're done here.
We're done here. That's scrap. Yeah. But we're not done dissecting all the drama of the weekend.
I'll also say this before we get into that. Small matter. Marc Marquez is only a little over 20 points behind his own Grand Prix only 2019 points tally after 10 rounds.
Which is crazy given what he won 12 Grand Prix that season.
Given his worst finish in the races that he did finish was second.
He had one DNF at COTA. Everything else was first or second. Yeah. Because he's winning more. He's on pace for 13 wins this season.
I think that might be lowballing it at this rate. It's actually kind of terrifying.
I'd actually argue, and Raptor is in the chat, and I agree with him, if you throw in the fact he's 9 out of 10 in sprints on top of that, I think he's at something like 60 points more than Pecco Bagnaia had this time last year after 10 weekends.
Correct.
About Oxen. Yeah, like it's obscene what he's doing right now. This is ridiculous.
Yes, he is basically in a full weekend and a half ahead of either of last year's title protagonists at this point of the year.
This is suffocatingly brilliant from Marc Marquez. He is riding as well as he's ever ridden. Everybody that knew their bikes knew this was going to happen. David Emmett said it was going to happen at the start of the year. Simon Patterson said that at the start of the year this was going to happen. Matt Oxley has said before the season started, you put the best rider on the best bike. This is what's going to happen. I didn't believe them all at first. I was wrong.
I kept the faith all these years. All these broken bones, all these shitty Hondas. Who, sadly, have defaulted back to being quite shitty in the last month or so.
Good news for KTM, though.
They didn't suck.
Yeah. What was that, 4 bikes in the points?
Yeah.
Good day for them.
Pedro 4th, again, I think it was.
Breaking up the Ducati monotony. Scene.
Yeah.
Oh, Dre, you got DeAndre Ayton.
Listen.
I knew that was going to be his response.
All right, so
you're not stitching me up with Lakers bullshit. 2 pods out of 3. I'm not standing that shit. Okay,
or at least 2 out of 4. Let's get into some other nonsense, like the Jorge Martin contract dispute.
Hang on, we'll talk about that a little bit later because I've put some stuff in the wrong order because we haven't really talked about Alex Marquez very much here because, I mean, he was having a pretty rough Grand Prix. He had dropped down to 5th. He was battling Pedro Acosta about halfway through this race. They're going down, coming out of the long left-hander at the end of Sector 1, coming down the back straight towards the very fast turn 6-7-8 corner sequence. They're banging elbows, fighting for position. The front of Alex Marquez's bike lifts up. It unsettles the bike when it comes back down. The whole thing falls over and tucks the front. Alex Marquez hits the deck at a 125 miles an hour.
I thought a part of Acosta actually clipped his brake lever. I thought that's what came out of that happened.
I'm not 100% sure on that. Apparently, Raptor in the chat is saying that he did hit the front brake lever by accident.
It puffed the front tire and it just sets him down.
Yeah,
immediately.
Setting down, it was a 125 mile an hour crash. Alex was largely fine, but he did break the metacarpal of his left hand.
Second one, I believe it was reported.
It's right here.
Yeah.
If you're watching the video version, if you're watching along with us.
Yeah,
he's not going to be pointing at anyone in the next week or so.
No, he flew straight to Madrid as soon as the Grand Prix was over.
You could get creative. You could get creative with it.
No.
Tell him that he's number one.
Unfortunate racing incident. Just one of those things. Alex Marquez has had to fly back to Madrid, get that finger surgically repaired. that same night. Apparently he's recovering well. I think he's going to take on the German Grand Prix in a week and a half's time, but the pain management is going to be the key factor in that, basically, because that is your breaking hand. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But the big real blow is 25 lost points to Marc Márquez in the title fight. Like I said, it's now a 68-point gap, and it's kind of sad that it took this crash for people to finally realize just how good Alex Márquez has been this season. It shouldn't have to come down to a crash that's effectively ended his title campaign for us to have this conversation. And again, certain people, I think, have spun Alex Márquez's campaign into a "why aren't you trying harder when he's having the best year of his life" sort of narrative discussion. But it's just sad, because Alex Márquez has been brilliant, and he didn't deserve that happening to him in that race, and that's just a shit way to completely suck the air out of this title fight, if you even want to call it a title fight.
Yeah, if we weren't done before, we certainly are now, and I mean, he's got plenty of margin back to third, because Pecco was, well, less said about this weekend the better, which, again, Pecco at Assen, absolutely demolished by Marc Márquez at another one of his best tracks, which of course means that he's then going to beat Mark at the Saxon Ring, because that's kind of how this year has been going. Fucking chance of that, by the way.
Rotten. Yeah, if Marc Márquez relinquishes the Saxon Ring heavyweight championship,
we are about to see things that should not be broadcast.
I do host my other MotoGP podcast on the Motorsport Network, Tank Slappers, and my co-host for that, Yuri Pudjemont, did joke that Som Kiat Chantra is going to get lapped in that race, and I felt really bad after he said it. Oh, dear.
Look, Som Kiat got on the board.
Is that a good segue to a bad topic?
Oh.
I guess now we can talk about Jorge Martin. I'm sorry for triple clutching it, but yes. Jorge Martin and Aprilia are not backing down of their contract dispute. Martin's agent, Albert Valera, doubled down on Martin's leaving declarations. Martin wants to leave Aprilia. Claim Martin is free to leave and Honda is an option. Aprilia CEO Massimo Rivera declared that his priority is to keep his rider, but also said he's prepared to negotiate a buyout or even go to court. They're adamant there's no clause in the contract. It's escalated to the point where Dorna CEO, Carmel Ezpeleta, has said that Martin cannot register to ride in the championship until either the dispute is settled or a judge rules on the case. So what comes next for Aprilia?
This is a whole mess. This is one of those marriages that you can see from afar going, oh man, that ain't gonna last.
Just being complimentary for a change about Christian Horner is just like, you know, if his star athletes want to leave, he won't stand in their way. And Massimo Rivera is just like, I don't think so.
Hold my baguette. After what happened at Le Mans, to start this whole drama off, I saved that there, confusing French and Italian references. Go me. But no.
Oh yeah, good job.
Smooth as you like. As I joked about in my script, this we're at the maybe a baby will save this marriage part of the divorce proceedings right now. That's what this feels like. This is ugly. This is both sides of the aisle digging their heels in and refusing to back down. That's what this effectively is. Albert Valera knew exactly what he was doing when he came to Assen, because he went to Assen and he was basically telling anyone in that paddock that was prepared to listen that this is still Martin's stance, nothing has changed, Honda's an option, but we're leaving at the end of the year because the contract says we can. He's being a little shit and he knows exactly what he's doing. You got to remember, this is the same guy that once was, he burst onto the scene by being Jorge Lorenzo's agent. And that was a man who did not mind getting his hands dirty when it came to negotiations over the course of his career, let me tell you. If it gets to a point where Carmelo Ezpeleta has to get involved, and allegedly he was pressured by Liberty to speak on the matter, behind the scenes, according to motorsport.com, who reported on this story.
A typical new owner's already meddling in affairs.
Yeah, because they're like, we're the owners now, settle this shit. You're like, it's like Troy from Community walking into the room and the dorm's on fire. Like, that's what this is. He doesn't want to get his hands dirty in a drama where the world champion is in contract limbo. It's just shit for everybody involved. There's no winner here. This is ugly for everybody involved. And, like, if anything, and I do find it's not totally relevant to this drama, but it is very funny that Marco Bezzecchi is single-handedly ruining what Jorge Martin's holdout is about, because clearly this bike is not terrible. Marco Bezzecchi is sixth in the championship right now.
Why not?
He was the only person breaking up the Ducati monotony at the front, other than Fabio Quartararo, who lost pole off the start quicker than Cadillac did at Le Mans. It's just messy. It's two dumb bitches going nuh-uh rather than exactly.
They need to sit down and just talk this buy out. And apparently, what's not helping is that there has been brief discussions about a buyout, but apparently the two sides are very far apart on the monetary value of said buyout. Aprilia doesn't want to spend the money to break off this contract, especially when they think they're in the right. And Jorge Martin wants to be financially compensated for essentially losing a year of his prime. So, well,
it's a good thing he's trying to go to Honda, where money is never, ever the problem.
And look, I don't know the true reasons why Martin's doing this. Like, I could speculate. I mean, I don't want to take the easy way out and just say it's the money. Because a part of me thinks being a MotoGP rider, being the superstitious person that MotoGP riders tend to be, he's probably just got it in his head that this bike is a donkey after the injuries it's given him. Which, again, not totally on Aprilia, not totally on him. Martin has made mistakes that's led up to this process. Yes, Qatar in particular was just an unfortunate accident. And the punishments and the injuries did not suit the crash that happened to him that day. But I wonder if it's just Martin so deep in his own head and deep in his own mental state that he now can't ride this thing mentally. But then I don't think it's that either, because he's openly said to Aprilia, we'll do another 6-race trial as an act of goodwill. And Rivera's fuck off with that.
I'm wondering if that ship has sailed at this point, because it seems like this relationship is significantly more fractured than the last time we talked about it.
Well, if Massimo is saying pony up and go to court as a last resort, then that says to me then that this is business now rather than personal. I still think what's going to happen is that they'll just negotiate a buyout and eventually break this off. No one wants to go to court over something like this. It is, one, it's expensive, but more importantly, it's time consuming.
Yeah, that's super assy.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time. And the thing about it as well is that if this went to a court, one, it would be in Milan, which Jorge Martin allegedly behind the scenes is not happy about, because it's an Italian soil, so he probably doesn't win a court case about this. And two, if it goes long in the courts and gets held up, Jorge has to honor the contract that he signed.
Yeah, so MotoGP as an entity has stepped in and said, honor it or you are not a licensed MotoGP rider.
Yeah. That's not just Ezepelta talking. That's on behalf of the Manufacturers Association and the IRTA, the Riders Teams Association. They're not going to take Jorge Martin playing hardball. They've basically come out on the record and said, sort your shit or you're not racing next year. It's that simple. And Honda have openly said, we're not touching this we're not going to tap a rider up until we know his contract status is in the clear. So it's all one big stalemate right now. Someone needs to blink here. And I don't know who it's going to be, but this has to get settled.
I increasingly feel, given the willingness that Massimo has to take it to court, I think it's going to have to be Martine. Because, like what are you going to do if the entire sport has dug their heels in and said, well, honor it, honor this, or you're not riding next year?
I don't know. I don't know what the game plan is from Albert Valera and Jorge Martin's camp. Like, what are they holding out for here?
Practically, like, we don't have precedent for this. Not in this sport.
Because normally, if a rider doesn't want to race for a team, 9 times out of 10, the team will just say, all right, fine, we'll break off your contract and off you go. Happens in bike racing all the time. But this is a situation where Martin wants to leave because of a clause in a contract. And Aprilia is like, no, no, we want you to stay. Like Massimo himself said, his priority is he wants to keep Martin. That's the weird thing about all this. If Jorge Martin tomorrow came out and said, I've changed my mind, I want to stay at Aprilia, Massimo would welcome him back with open arms. Right now. I don't disbelieve him when he says his priority is wanting to keep Martin. He knows how good Jorge Martin is. He knows
he's the reigning world champion.
He's the reigning world champion, and he's openly said, I will forget this whole shit ever happened if you change your mind right now. And it's like, Aprilia is saying, please stay. We don't want to do this. And Martin's like, nuh-uh, I want out. This is such a bizarre situation. It really is. And again, neither side is prepared to back down. It's crazy. I think
I am concerned with what the consequences will be if those involved dig their heels in any further.
They've got to settle this out of court. Like, someone's gonna have to blink on this one, because, like I said, I don't think either party wants to see this in a courtroom get settled or have a judge try and settle this. If you can avoid it, you'll take anything to avoid that option. And this guy, we've got Kira in the chat, for example, saying it feels like there has to be more to it than we know, but I can't imagine what. I fully agree. It feels like a piece of the puzzle is missing, but I don't know what it is. I can't tell you.
Valentino at Ducati did not deteriorate this quick. Jorge Lorenzo at Honda didn't deteriorate this quick.
Yeah. And Lorenzo pulled a fast one and faked a retirement. And it was less ugly than this.
That's one of the craziest things.
Like, that happened.
It's very, very odd. There has to be more to it that we don't know. But, like, and that makes me wonder, like, if it does end up in court, we're going to find out what that is.
It's all going to get laid out on the table. We'll be able to read it. We'll know for ourselves what the language of this contract reads.
The problem is, what I'm almost certain will happen in that situation is one of the best bike riders in the world is going to be contractually sidelined rather than injury sidelined for at least a year.
Yeah. It's Raptor summed it up in the chat very, very well, where it was like, it's very F1 in 1994. Where Bernie Eccleston was trying to do everything to get Nigel Mansell back on the F1 grid, coming off the back of 93, where Mansell was negotiating with Williams, and it just did not come together, and it was just to the point where Mansell just straight up retired because he just couldn't take it anymore.
Well, first he went to McLaren after a chunk of change in 94, and then he retired.
Yeah. More or less.
And the McLaren stint went so good for Nigel Mansell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The golf club was real busy. Yeah, 100%. What a messy bitch of a situation that is. And I still have no idea how it's going to go. Because, like, as Cam said, this is unprecedented. We've never seen this in MotoGP. And I wonder, one more point to add to this as well. What does Honda do? Honda wants Jorge Martin. And yeah, I don't blame
they said it themselves that they are not going to involve themselves in this, and I would say, pick a side. They're not going to shoot their shot unless this contract situation is resolved. And I don't think it's going. I don't think it's going to get resolved this year.
And Honda respect Aprilia. They've already had meetings between the two parties. Honda have got a gentleman's agreement with Aprilia saying we will not interfere until this is settled, basically. Like, they've put themselves, like, Puig, Alberto Puig has said on the record, you'd be an idiot not to want Jorge Martin in your MotoGP team. And looking at the free agency market, if Jorge Martin hits that market, he's number one by a country mile compared to who else is out there.
Yeah, copy and paste our discussion regarding George Russell and Max Verstappen. Every team on this grid would kill to have Jorge Martin, other than Ducati, because they're doing just fine right now.
But how long would a manufacturer like Honda be prepared to wait before they've got to sort out their own ducks in a row? Because they've got multiple riders that are also out of contract at the end of the season. Johann Zarco is a free agent end of the year. Luca Marini is a free agent, and Somkiat Chantra has a performance break clause in his contract at the end of the season. So they could potentially be rotating around three of their seats for next year. I don't think it'll actually be that complicated, but...
There's one person who I guarantee will be riding a Honda next year, Dre. That'd be Johann Zarco.
Yes. I don't think that'll be an issue. I think Zarco's publicly said, as long as you give me a factory bike next year, then I'll stay at LCR, no problem. So he's made it easy for him in that. Just give him a competitive bike and he'll stay, basically. But as I know, Johann is very loyal to his sponsors. And credit to him where that's concerned. But
it's a good thing both teams have the same sponsor then.
Indeed. But how long does Honda leave it? And you got to remember as well, Pedro Acosta is still allegedly behind the scenes fighting for a release.
There's not a lot of riders that are happy with where they're at right now.
If you're not,
everybody wants to be in Ducati except for Jorge Martin.
Yeah, Fabio Quartararo let rip before this weekend even started.
You chose this. By the way, great livery. R7's one of my favorite bikes ever. 10 out of 10.
Good choice.
Unfortunately, it was just as slow as the R7 was at the end of the 90s, when every time they tried to get horsepower out of it, the crankshaft exploded. My God, the Yamaha is bad in race trim.
Yeah.
You chose this. You got your bag, and you get to spend your money as your bike is, slowly.
Yeah.
And Honda have... let's just say, regress to the mean aggressively this past month or so.
Ever since Silverstone, they're back to being fringe point scorers.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Which is still an improvement on last year, given everything is an improvement on last year's Honda. But I don't know about this factory Honda lineup going forward.
Look, Pedro Acosta's in good form at a time where he could potentially be a free agent. Aprilia is all right. There could potentially be one Honda that flips hands even before the end of the season, which is not fair because we finally got our first some points of the season.
It feels like this is the first time we can actually talk about Chantra at all this season.
I wanted this to work. Because, like, Hafiz Syren was panned as the Southeast Asian pay rider who wouldn't belong on talent. And by and large, like, he didn't set the world on fire when he was in MotoGP, but he wasn't outright terrible. And I thought maybe Chantra would have a chance to emulate that. I don't know if it's just he hates this bike or he is getting left behind by the additional speed, but it has been rough.
He got that point, but he was 49 seconds off the win. He passed Aleix Espargaró, who was there as a wild card this weekend, on the final lap. Apparently, he was basically touring.
Well, no, was he not filling in for Marini?
He was, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, same thing, really, effectively, in this point. They were going to use their wild card on this weekend for Aleix anyway, but it's just, it's one less bike because of the Marini situation. But yeah, like, apparently Chantra spent his time touring around at like a second a lap off the pace, more like two, really, because Chantra was 49 seconds off the win, but so was Aleix Espargaró. and he was learning off watching Aleix ride the bike and then passed him on the final lap, which, look, I'm happy for Somkiat. He's a really nice guy. But whenever I start
that's always the death knell on Motorsport 101.
Because we love assholes, man, on this podcast.
We do.
We could never beat the Verstappen 101 allegations.
Now, well, Alex Palou's a really nice guy. Unless you're Ryan Eric King on iRacing.
Mm-hmm. But that's the problem.
Still nicer than Devlin.
That's the problem. Like, the race reported this weekend that apparently Chantra is so below par, LCR are prepared to basically hand Idemitsu their money back for the lucrative title sponsor of that second bike just so they can move on from Chantra.
Yeah, forget pay rider. That is, legitimately speaking, a paid bike. That bike is subsidized in its pretty much its entirety by Idemitsu. And if LCR is willing to hand that money back and say, no thanks, we're good. Oh, it's got to be worse. It's got to be a lot worse on the inside than what we're seeing.
Well, let's put it to you this way. Chantra was a second and a half a lap off the pace. That is a chasm in MotoGP terms. Like,
it sucks to say, but it does feel like this is simply a case of a rider that is out of his depth.
Yeah, just isn't good enough at this level. And look, he wasn't terrible in Moto2. He was streaky, but he did win a couple of races in Moto2. He wasn't dreadful over there. He was a top 10 rider, a fringe top 10 level rider in Moto2. But he would not have been promoted under normal circumstances on performance alone. Of course, they want the East to Southeast Asian connection to have riders on the grid to help promote themselves. And, you know, obviously Honda and the Asia Talent Cup and all the ties that come with that. Raptor in the chat is asking, is there another Honda Asia Cup graduate that could fit in from Moto2? At least not an Asian rider, but at least a graduate? No.
No, there isn't. And
I'm looking at who's here, and at this point,
again, LCR has made the point, like, this is not worth it. It is more worth it for us to just probably speaking. Oh, I'm getting a phone call. Scam likely. Very neat. It's probably more likely that they just ask Castrol,
hey. That's Chantra on the phone.
Ayumu Sasaki and Yuki Tsunami are struggling in Moto2 so far this year.
Here's the deal. LCR will probably just ask Castrol, and Honda can probably tug on their ear as well. Do you want to just sponsor all four bikes?
Why not?
Because
discount deal.
Exactly. And look at it like this. Like, let's say they get Jorge Martin. Purely hypothetical. You probably want to keep Marini on, given he has been a great token for their development. He has given them solid feedback. Plug him into the other LCR alongside Zarco, and then it's probably Mir and Martin on the factory bikes.
Yeah, apparently Luca Marini is well liked in the Honda camp for his development and his feedback and his intuition. And, you know, he did earn a party favor by going out to Japan and helping them out with their Suzuka 8-hour prep as well. He's tried, he's made a sincere effort to try and he is coming up soon. Yeah, he's made a sincere effort to, you know, build a relationship with Honda. He wants to stay. You know, and I think they could. I don't think you let Luca Marini go. I think he's more than good enough to still be there in that team.
And like, if you're Honda right now, you still need all the help you can get developmentally. You're still, I mean, look, Honda are not what they were even for like 5 years ago. But still, the more development that you've got to throw at this, the better off you're probably going to start 2027. With the major reset on the bikes.
Is it time to kick the tires on a third chance for Iker Lecuona?
Oh.
Get ready to learn Suzuka 8 hours again, buddy. I'm fully of the opinion. You keep Marini on if you can. If you've got four bikes and you're in the hole that Honda is, and look, they are having a better year than they did last year, it still ain't great. you need all the help you can get. Have four legitimate development potential riders on your bike. Because right now, that is one less bike pretty much every race that they're getting useful data off of.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I'm in
full agreement. Look at where it got Ducati all those years.
Also, worth pointing out one more rumor from City Season before we move on, because it was reported today again by my colleague Yuri Pugimont and Richard Asher, my two Tank Slappers co-hosts.
This is now a Tank Slappers advertisement.
Yes, you're welcome. It's a spicy one because it looks like we got a good idea as to who's going to be on the second Pramac. Because somebody asked me in my Australian box, is it going to be Jack Miller or Miguel Oliveira? The answer might be neither.
Neither.
Yeah. The talk is Diego Moreira is now favorite for that seat. It looks like, I mean, yes, he's coming off the back of his first Moto2 win this weekend. Beat Aaron Canet for it. Brazil's first ever Moto2 victory. First victory for a Brazilian rider in any class since Alex Barros. Remember him? Yeah, the rumors are strong that Diego is going to be the second bike for Pramac next season. The story is that he signed a partnership deal with Yamaha Brazil. So basically being the face of Yamaha in Brazil, Yamaha wants to expand into South America. He's a good face to have at the front of that. We all know Brazil has got a Grand Prix that's confirmed for next year, for next year's MotoGP calendar. And Dorna does want South American representation on the grid. So I don't like making this argument because, unfortunately, it's always been a thing when it comes to MotoGP. The Brazilian passport's a huge influence in this. And also, it's just good for Pramac because they could say, hey, if Pramac's a true junior team now and it's going to be a development team, it makes sense to bring in a 21-year-old prospect who's in title contention right now in Moto2. He's 31 right. points behind Manu Gonzalez in the Moto2 standings right now. And Moreira's good. Like, this turn of form, he's been excellent for the last month or so in Moto2. Should have won at Aragon, was very unlucky not to win there, was in contention at Silverstone, won just past race at Assen. It makes a lot of sense to get him in there alongside Toprak. It's not a bad insurance policy if the Toprak experiment doesn't work out. I feel gutted for Jack and Miguel, mind you, if that's the way this plays out. We'll have to wait and see if any other seats open up, but...
Yeah, it's like, we thought Jack Miller was going here to collect a check, and he's actually been pretty damn solid this season.
He's been okay. Miguel's been badly hurt. Again, apparently there is another performance clause in Miguel Oliveira's contract to release him at the end of the year if he's below a certain position. Apparently it's a very team-favorable number on that one. And again, Miguel's kind of arguing about it behind the scenes because he missed four races through injury. But it's looking like Yamaha's just going to cut bait with the pair of them and to get Moreira in. Miller apparently has got a World Superbike Ducati offer ready to go because it was confirmed a couple of weeks ago that Alvaro Bautista will not be returning to the Ducati factory team over there.
My dude Bautista did the equivalent of the Le Mans BOP rant.
Oh yeah, man!
2 days ago,
man dropped a hammer on his Instagram account talking about, in my opinion, the rule that pretty much killed his World Superbike career, the weight limit rule. For those who don't watch Worlds regularly, 2 years ago they brought in a rule that said that there was going to be a new threshold for a combined bike and rider minimum weight. And because Alvaro Bautista is quite small, he's only 5'5", this hurt him quite a lot because essentially they have to put more ballast on the bike to get to that minimum weight threshold. And the Panigale is quite a small bike. So add in like 15 to 20 kilos of ballast. That's like 10 to 15% of the bike's total weight. So if you're putting that much ballast on your setup, it's a ruiner. Allegedly, the person that pulled quite hard for that rule was Scott Redding, who is a 6-foot-tall, 95-kilo rider, who always thought it was unfair that because that he felt like he was being punished for being so big.
Nico Hülkenberg 10 years ago can certainly relate to this when he was literally getting passed up for rides for being, like, 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, this was a few years ago. Scott Redding led a very nasty smear campaign in regards to this rule push, to the point where he was posting topless pictures of himself saying that, do you think it's fair that I weigh 40 kilos more than Alvaro? Like, why aren't we all running the same package? And to which my first thought was, did they kill Michael Phelps because his lungs were too big? No. I would say there probably was a good faith debate you could have about the idea of a minimum weight rule in motorsport and talking about driver health. Let's just say Scott Redding took the low road in that regard. But yeah, I wanted to get that in because Alvaro talked about it on Main, and I think it was worth talking about. And I do recommend you give it a read because it's been played up for a good few years in World Superbikes. And I'll say on the record, where my opinion sits, I think it was bullshit. And I think what Scott Redding did was bullshit. And I think it was nasty and ugly. And as Raptor quite rightly says in our chat, these sorts of issues are rarely debated in good faith. He was mad that Alvaro was kicking his ass a few years ago and beating fair and square on the same bike. And the only out he had was the fact he weighed 40 kilos more than Alvaro did. That's the only excuse he had. And he played it up to the point where the series took the bait. Yeah, it's just shit. And I don't like it. And yeah, that was very much a thing.
Well, if karma is a thing, Scott Redding's still getting smoked like brisket these days.
Well, you know, he'll be fitted in British Superbikes this weekend. You know, I'm glad that Scott has found his level again after winning that title there back in 2019. All I will say in this publicly is body shaming is bad. Let's not do that when we can help it. And it's a very icky argument that is only really brought up to weaponize against people. It was ugly, it was nasty, and it completely derailed the career of one of the greatest World Superbike riders of all time, Alvaro Bautista. And that sucks on a human and on a sporting level. Annoyingly as well, I hate to leave an episode on a sour note as well, but race control in MotoGP, please get your shit together. That Moto Free race was horrendous. For those who haven't seen it, and I'm going to be honest here, you probably don't want to go out of your way to find the footage. The penultimate lap of that race, and I warn you, I'm going to be quite vivid in the details here. At the final chicane, Luca Lanetta was run over by another competitor at the final chicane of the on the penultimate lap of the Moto 3 race. It was a three-bike crash between him, Tayo Furusato, and David Almansa. Lanetta was run over as he fed off his bike by another competitor. They ended up in the wall. Luca Lanetta, sadly, has broken his leg as a result of this incident. And let me tell you, he is a very, very lucky boy. It was a broken leg.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily what's upset me, as unfortunate as that situation is. These are sometimes inevitable when it comes to bike racing. Race control did not red flag the race until the eventual winner. And look, it was David Munoz on the road. It was Jose Antonio Rueda when they did red flag, because obviously they go back a lap. David Munoz was less than 500 meters from the checkered flag before they finally red flagged it, because they had to put an ambulance on track to make sure that Lynetta can be taken to the medical center as quickly as possible. It is an absolute disgrace that it took race control over a full lap of the track to pull out the red flag on a part of the track where the field was entering at full racing speed because it was the final lap of the Grand Prix. It's horrific. It is horrific. Technically speaking, David Munoz overtook a rider under a red flag, which should be a severe punishment, quite frankly. No further action was taken.
Yeah, no punishment for that.
It just angers me that race control and the safety commission involved are taking a dangerous level of risk in officiating these races where red flags are just seemingly the absolute final resort when they shouldn't be. That, like, we saw on the hard camera Lynetta get running over. That race should have been halted immediately.
But when it should be the only option. That is a scenario you don't need. You can see the replay once, and you're race control, and you have angles that we don't even see. It is absurd to me that race was not immediately red flagged. No matter, regardless of whether he was injured or not.
They had it on the hard camera. We could all see it. Everybody knew what they had just seen. And they let them go around for a full lap and come back around to the scene of the incident before they red flagged it. That's appalling. That is farcical.
Race control, not fit for purpose.
Yeah, it is absolutely farcical. There needs to be a third party investigation into the race control department of how that race was officiated, because that they are a liability. If that is what is going down at the end of a Moto3 race, if they can't see that, then they are not fit to do their jobs properly. I could get into a huge debate about the state of Moto3 and how we need more power and we need to just effectively just stop this pack racing nonsense, because it is getting to the point where it is like it. You can be subjective about the entertainment value in all of this. It's incredibly dangerous. At this point, the amount of aggressive moves that were in that the end of that Moto3 race was stark. It was dangerous to the point where I was watching with like my fingers over my eyes. I don't want to keep having this conversation. Jason Dupasquier we lost him in 2021. He was one of three riders that lost their lives in major motorcycle series bike races. That was a dark year, 2021. And I don't want to go through that sort of year again. The sport has dodged serious bullets since then. And I don't want to keep having this conversation. This is avoidable. We can do something about this. Get your shit together, Dorna. Stop hiring Nepo babies in safety roles and get a race control department that actually knows what it's fucking doing. Otherwise, people may die. And that's not me exaggerating. That's not me going over the top for the sake of trying to pull an audience number in. Because people have died. And I keep having to have this conversation on a podcast, and I don't really want to keep doing it, to be honest with you. I don't want to look at Moto3 and say to myself, I don't want to watch you because it's too dangerous. I shouldn't have to feel that way about any sporting series, let alone motorcycle racing. It's ridiculous. We're back, MotoGP-wise, in a week and a half's time at the Saxon Ring.
Mark Marquez puts the belt on the line.
Oh, yay. Can't wait for that one.
Well, in case you thought that these previous tracks didn't suit Mark Marquez, well, this one will.
Good luck. We'll be back next week to talk about Formula One's British Grand Prix and IndyCar's Mid-Ohio 200. We'll see you then. I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connor and Cam Buckley. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys soon. Take care.